Welcome to Keep the Hotel Empty. Today we've kept the hotel empty to welcome in Xavier and Nick, or Nicholas, depending on if you are here or from the future.
Right.
From the band Penny Fountain. Gentlemen, welcome.
Hey,
how you doing, man?
Good, man. Stoked to have you guys here. I know it's been a minute since we've been trying to get you in, and that a bunch of the other bands that we've talked to are bands that are in your circle, so we have some kind of overlapping Venn diagram of existence, and I do know you're Sam Ash alum.
Yeah, so it's kind of a sad story there.
It's a sad story, but you got to wear it with pride.
Right, I do.
R.I.P. Sam Ash. Mm-hmm. So, Penny Fountain, I know you guys got kind of a unique sound that has a bunch of familiarity to it. I want to kind of take the story. What we do around here is ceremoniously press rewind. I want you to press rewind for me, Xavier, where music kind of comes into your life and you start doing the band thing.
Well, okay. So the band thing took a little bit to get to, but music has always been a part of my life because, well, I'm from West Virginia. It's kind of wild, but like the Bible Belt in there. My whole family really liked bluegrass. I don't, sorry. But every family reunion, bluegrass, bluegrass, bluegrass. So there was always, like, everybody knew how to play instruments. I didn't yet. But then my parents were kind of the black sheep. I mean, look at how I dress. This is how my whole, my whole four family is, like, the core family. We were kind of the black sheep. We listened to, like, metal. And my dad would pick me up from first grade. I would hear, like, Slipknot, like, all the time. Every time he picked me up, it would be something like that. Or, like, some, like, divorced dad rock, even though he's not divorced. you know the vibe.
Yeah.
But it took a while. I always liked music. But I was, like, I mean, I was a kid. I was just really focused on video games for, like, the longest time, if I'm going to be real. Then more of, like, whenever I got into, like, middle school is whenever I started to be like, oh, I kind of like bands, okay? I kind of really like this certain band, and I can, like, start listening to, like, just them or whatever, like, really figuring out what I like. Because I remember, like, one of the first bands that I liked was way before that. It was Skillet and Sick Puppies. And I had, like, this little, like, iPod knockoff, and I only had, like, three songs on it. And it was, like, Monster, Odd One, and You're Going Down. It was wild, but I love those songs. I beat them to death.
Nice.
But yeah, later, started finding the bands I like Green Day. If you think, everybody says, like, Green Day is like Posers. You all listen to them. Everybody listens to them.
Of course.
Started out. Come on. Yeah. Don't lie.
No.
right? It's
for,
like,
a long time, that's the case.
Yeah.
There's, right? Like 20 years worth of people that can say that.
Yeah. They, listening, like, seeing Billy Joe play, I was like, oh, I want to do that. Like, I'll be real. I was like, that's what I want to do. So I went to this school. It was an art school. Signed up for guitar classes.
And how old are you at this point?
This is seventh grade. I remember signing up for it in class, looking at my elective sheet, because I've been in, like, a band, and I was playing the trumpet. I didn't really want to play the trumpet. That wasn't my thing.
But it was music still.
Yeah, it was music, and I was kind of getting my foot in the door, but I was like, I don't really want to do this. I want to do something. I saw the other kids, like, in the band playing the guitar, and I was like, that looks cool. I want to do that. And so I blanked out. I signed up in seventh grade, my electives. And then in eighth grade was my first year of, like, guitar class, because I just, like, I was so excited to play the guitar before, like, during the summer. I had bought, like, a really, really, like, shitty guitar from my friend, Justin. Long time. Oh, my bad. It's an old friend. Not this Justin.
I just
forgot about
mic 3. So we just paused.
I was gonna say,
okay. Some creative editing. This
is the last time we're dealing with this. I'll just start back when I said, like, I got my guitar.
Yep.
Okay.
You
got?
Not yet.
I be talking with my hands.
Yeah, I am. Like,
all right, let it go. Let's see.
Good.
Nope.
No, it's bad. And this morning when I plugged in, we did two other interviews today. And this morning when I plugged in, I was like, this is the last day we have to do this. Good?
Nope.
Well, that might have been the death now, my man.
Maybe we can share the mic too?
No.
Oh, wait. Ah, we got
okay,
it.
But I'm,
yeah.
See, dead
juju
still.
Right there.
Yeah,
juju right there.
Nah, don't sweat it, man. It's, you know, it's the ceremonious end of this. After this, we're gonna take it out back and shoot it.
Alrighty, So yeah, it started, I got a guitar from one of my friends a long time ago. It was my first guitar. Pretty shitty, it was a first act. I don't feel bad about saying that, it's first act. But yeah, hey, that was my first guitar, and that's the point of it. It was my first act. I started with it. Do not have that guitar. I don't know where it went.
It's gone. Oh, damn.
Right? I know. Like,
someday the universe will maybe bring it back to you.
I don't really want it. I mean, it's okay. I have
it's like a trophy piece.
I have my main first guitar that I call it, because it's like a it's like an Epiphone. It's what's the Epiphone? I forgot the name of it, but it's like that, everybody knows it. It's that Epiphone starter guitar, and I loved that one. So that's the one I'm like, that's my true first baby. Because I only played on that one for like 4 months, and then I was like, I want it. I want a new one.
Nice. Because
I started realizing, I was like, I don't like this. Because I realized it sounded bad and all of that. Then yeah, started playing in like a few like school bands, kind of just getting my foot in the door of like how playing in a band works. There's probably some videos on YouTube of me like fucking up the Red Hot Chili Peppers on stage.
Nice.
Yeah, it was really bad. I forgot my distortion pedal, and like halfway through it, like we were like playing Can't Stop, and I like turn around and I'm like, oh, cool, I don't have my distortion pedal. And like, so like whenever like the solo kicks in, it's just pew, pew, pew. And I was like, oh, well, just gotta own it. But those were good experiences, because it taught me like, yeah, I fucked up on stage plenty of times. Plenty of times, but like it taught me how to get through it. Like, you just don't really acknowledge it, you just go through it,
right?
And then, yeah, getting into high school, there was like played a few more like school band type stuff, but then the big thing happened. It was at like a water fountain. One of my friends came up and was like, hey, start a band, you want to be in it? And I was like, sure, yeah, I want to be in it. And yeah, the first name of it was the Hot Tamales. I didn't stay. That was for 4 days. So to, you know,
it was a strong 4 days though.
Yeah, it was like, yeah, and then it became known as Penny Fountain. And then, my God, there's so, like, this is like such a big epilogue to like the lore of Penny Fountain.
Yeah. So when you're first starting to play,
mm-hmm.
are you thinking to yourself, I want to get in a band? Did you get in a band right away, or did you have like that period of bedroom kid hacking away?
Yeah, just trying my best to like sit in there and learn, because I was like, well, I can't really do anything right now. I remember there were times I would like walk outside in my neighborhood and just have my amp like and drag it all the way out and just stand there and hope people would like walk up and listen to me play. I don't know what I was thinking. I was in like a suburban neighborhood.
Did you open up your guitar case so people could like drop change in there while you're
but like I was like in the middle of the city or something. No, yeah. It's just like in like
performing music, street musician. Yeah.
There was no one there. I was just, hey, I was trying. I was dedicated.
I mean, that you gotta want it.
Yeah. I was like, this ain't working.
So tell me, you mentioned that you were able to play at school, in an mm-hmm. art school. Tell me about, in hindsight now, what that seems like. Do you think that this path would have been how it's been for you without that? I'm always curious when people that have a creative tendency get introduced to it earlier and they have it in school versus the ones that get starved of it, for want of a better way of putting it.
That's a really, really good question, because, I mean, being in that school, it's kind of like, well, my whole life has kind of been like around the band, like since then. It's always been like, even at school, like I still got all my work done, we'll say that. But I was just always sitting there thinking about the band. So I guess there definitely would be some differences. Like, I might have like focused more on like video games or like stuff like that, because I really like music. I really liked it, but it definitely did like push me to go in the music direction. I had some really cool teachers there. Some not really cool ones, but some really cool ones. They really like pushed me, and then like having your peers always doing art stuff pushed you, because like I used to really like to draw. It's not really a thing I do much anymore, because I don't know, I'm so focused on with the band. It's like I have these other skills that I've liked to do, like such as graphic design or anything like that. I've learned how to do that. When I do that with Photoshop, I kind of like, I don't know, if I want to do something, I'll figure it out. But so I feel like if I didn't have the school, I didn't have all that, I probably would have gone into like some one of them other fields or focused on one of that more, because there's plenty of stuff I do. But that's like, I don't know. Yeah, like I feel like if I didn't have that, I would have focused on something else probably.
Yeah, and had other things for maybe for a distraction that weren't mm-hmm. as productive as music.
Something would have picked up. But
so band picks up. So what are like the first rehearsals when you're playing with a band like? Is this moment where you're just like, oh man, this is the shit right here. This is what I was waiting for.
It was basically like, it was also kind of like a wake up call. Cause I kind of had this feeling, I'm like, we're going to be amazing. And then I was like, okay, we need to work. We need to get better. I was like, okay, we're not amazing.
We're not going to be amazing instantly.
Yeah. I remember, I don't know if it's still on YouTube. It's probably gone now. But like, there was like one of like our very first performances. I wasn't even the original singer or anything. I was just, I started out as the bass. I've always been the bass player. Like, but I wasn't like the original singer. And then, so I was just playing bass. But like, man, that show, it's wild to see. Cause like, we had like this weird little like stage in like the middle of the school. It was like, we had three stages at the school. We had one for theater, another tiny one for theater, and then like this big one outside, which they didn't put a lot of work into because they mainly cared about the theater kids.
Right.
But like this one outside that had like four like plugs and then like an over thing. And I was like, okay, it works. But that's where we played. And I loved it. I liked that stage because it made me feel like, also because these kids are probably kind of like forced there because we'd play like during the thing called like, it's like study hall, but like a break thing.
Right.
For like 30 minutes, we just got to chill outside and do things. So that's usually when we would play.
That's
so
awesome.
Thinking about it, these kids kind of probably got like forced to. Like thinking back, they're like sitting out there like, oh, we're going to chill here. And they look up and they see us like setting up and they're like, oh, okay. So this is how.
Dude, captive audience ain't easy to get though.
Right? No, I was like, y'all are staying.
Yeah, it'd be Johnny Cash in a prison or something. Oh, yeah.
Right? It's like, I mean, we had a lot of. People made fun of us. You know what I mean? It's what's the wild thing? We went to an art school and we still got made fun of. Well, I don't get it. Like,
no place is safe.
No, it's really not. hey, you just gotta push through. People were mean. People were always mean about the band. People probably always will be. But it's just this story, there's a theme of just like pushing through. Everything we're probably going to talk about today is going to be a common theme of this.
So when does that start to unveil itself to you? What's the first pushing through in the Penny Fountain legacy?
Huh.
Yeah, he's got to think about this one.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's really kind of the first point where you have to realize this band is too significant to quit over, you know?
I mean, yeah, because we've...
What, your earlier members leaving, right? Like, that was definitely like the...
We've had earlier members leave, which, like, taught me that, like, I don't know. Like, there's so many different, like, themes that, like, go into all of this. It's like, so moving down here from West Virginia, I lost friends. So then they just, like, stopped talking to me and moved down here, which I can't blame them for. Now we were kids. But, like, that time, I was like, oh, I'm hurt. So then I learned, okay, you can lose friends. And then you get into, like, high school, whenever we're playing the band. We had certain members there that, like, you know, you think you're going to be friends with for a while. And then they end up leaving the band. And then there was the few of us. So that was one thing I definitely had to push through. High school is high school. So you got to push through all of that. Like,
regardless of the band.
Yeah. No, like high school is just that. And then being in a band causes so many more problems. So just pushing through that. And then recently having like other members leave the band, you got to push through that. So yeah, this... It's just like a cycle of just like pushing through. Keep on going. Cause like, I'm gonna be real. I'm gonna say I want to get as far as I can with this band. That is what, that's my dream. That's what I want to do. And I love making music. I love it all. And I want to go as far as I absolutely can. And so I'm gonna keep pushing for that. Like, that's what I've always told myself. Keep pushing for what you want. Cause you only have one life and I'm not gonna sit here and waste it. I'm gonna do what I want. And if I fail, well, at least I failed trying.
Like, yeah.
That's how I look at it. And it's, some people just aren't, like, they don't have the same mindset as that. And that's fine. Like, they have their own ways. But that's how I am. And that's how I view this band. Well, I'm pretty sure that's how you are.
Yeah, we're both like, ridiculously way more similar than we need to be. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're not willing to push, regardless of what that sacrifice means, being in a band is going to be exponentially more difficult than it already is.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Thank you for sticking with us. We hope you're enjoying the episode. We'd like to take this time to talk to our sponsor for this week, Tony Barrett from Barrett Realty.
Thank you, brother. I really appreciate you having us on the show. Barrett Realty has been in business for 20 years, and we are a boutique real estate company. And I look forward to servicing our community with people that want to buy and sell property. I think it's very important that we're out there advocating for personal property rights. And we want to be the people that you select when it comes to buying and selling homes. So please, if you're interested in buying or selling homes in Manatee, Sarasota, or surrounding counties, reach out to us at Barrett Realty at 941-745-9999 or brmovesyou.com.
Again, we'd like to send a big thanks out to Tony Barrett, Barrett Realty, for sponsoring this episode and being an awesome part of this community. Please enjoy the rest.
There's going to be hardships. There's going to, things are just going to happen. You're going to have to get through them.
Yeah.
People are going to screw you over, whether that be people you like, your friends that you like, just things that will just happen. Promoters, bookers,
yeah,
all of these things. Like, we've been scammed out of money by bookers before, like a lot of money.
That's how we met.
Is it really?
Yeah, dude, the Orpheum.
Oh, remember that one guy? Yeah, there was like that one guy at the Orpheum that used to, he disappeared, but he used to book a bunch of shows. The one
scream at everybody?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Wait, not him?
No. Yeah, him too.
All of them? I mean, they were all kind of assholes, to be honest.
Yeah, but then like...
varying degrees of screaming.
Yeah.
The people like that work at the Orpheum now are fine. It was like, not even the people that work at the Orpheum, it was just some bookers that were working there for a bit.
The one too, the one that was in... because the new one's in Orlando? Is it still in Tampa?
No.
Because there was the original...
He doesn't know what he's talking about.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, it was this... it was just really... this is a really shitty booker, and like... just really mean to people and scammed you out of money. And then we had this other guy. I'll say your name. What's his name? He still owes me money. John Betts from Lights Out Booking. You owe me money. You owe me $1,000. And he disappeared. And like he owes a bunch of people. Like some of our friends, like, and like Nova Brew, like he owes a bunch of people money and he's like disappeared. But like, I'm probably never getting that back. But
yeah. Like, well, this is some of the road you have to learn in the music industry when you're going to, you know, when you're freewheeling it.
You got to have thick skin. You really do. People are going to try and hurt you. There's a lot of things people are going to try and do. And you got to keep on. You got to stay true to yourself. Stay true to your values. Stay true to who you are. Just keep on.
Yeah. It's like, that's the name. Hanging in is such the name of the game. So take me back to when you're coming out of high school and the band is getting a little bit more serious and maybe your first round of serious members. How are you handling the writing of music?
Here's the wild thing. So like some of our songs that we, okay. A lot of the songs that we just released on like Attack of the Ducks were written actually back in high school. Those are actually still songs from high school. We released an album in high school. It sounded awful. And so we just took like the best songs from it and re-released them as like, hang on. I had a burp. We like re-released them, re-recorded them, everything to make them, because we found an actual producer and everything to make them actually sound. Because the song sounded bad, but they had like potential. Like you could hear in the song, like the way that they were mixed. The songs themselves weren't bad. It was the way that they were mixed and all of that.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I can hear that this could be really good if it was given the proper attention. So then.
Amen to that.
Like after high, there's a lot that's happened. It's crazy. So like during high school, we were on this show called No Cover. That's how I made a lot of, it was like a battle of the bands thing. It kind of like failed. It only had one season.
Oh, that was with like a Tosin Abasi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were on that show. It was pretty crazy. I remember thinking that we were going to get famous. It didn't happen. But like, I remember I was like, we're going to be in LA, all of this. It was really cool. The thing is, the show, sucks that it failed because I think it was a really cool idea.
Yeah, I saw that. I thought it was a cool idea.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool. We were on there. That was kind of like, I don't know, whenever I went out to California, it really hit me. I was like, this is what I want. I don't want to live there. But like, I was like, this is what I want to do. Like, everything was so expensive.
Yeah.
But I was like, I want to do this. Like, I want to do this shit. Getting to meet Kellen Quinn and everybody on there. Kellen Quinn is like one of our idols. And having that man, like, I'm going to be real. Like, I'm still just a dude. Having him, like, follow us when we were out there, like, I freaked out. I know that may sound cringe to say, but I did because I was still in high school in this little band that we had. We weren't even at 1,000 followers yet, and we were out there in L.A. doing this. That's a crazy thing. It's like,
yeah, and I have to ask, how do you get to that point? Did you go through, like, some series of battles of the bands? Did you submit a demo?
We heard, like, my mom was listening to the radio. I think it was, like, on 98 Rock or something. 98 Rock. Good old 98 Rock.
Rock radio.
Yeah, same 8 songs. But we heard something. She said she heard something about No Cover and was like, guys, do this. I have a really good feeling about it. And we were like, okay. We checked it out. And then we just like, we saw like there was like a $500 like submission thing. It was like the highest tier. And we were like, let's just do it. Like, I don't really like paying for stuff like that. But I was like, Let's just do it, because like, what if we made it on there? Like, I think we're good. And this is like, So we submitted some of our like ideas, our demos and everything, and somehow that we got like picked. And it was like, oh wow, we're actually
doing
this.
So you just
went
from zero to going on the show.
Yeah, it was kind of like that. Like some people thought we were like industry plant. I remember when we released some things and I was like, no, what are you talking about? That'd be cool.
But
like,
be
we're
cool
definitely not. I'm still just a dude living at home. But yeah, so we had that and it was a really cool thing. It just kind of like, oh shit, we're going out to LA. I've never been to LA. Went out there, got to meet all these crazy people like Gavin Rossdale from Bush. I told him whenever I was on there, I was like, the first song I ever learned how to play on guitar, it was literally Glycerine because it's easy. And I just learned and I was like, now you're sitting here like talking to me. I'm like, wow, this is the very first song I've ever learned how to learn. It's cool.
Well, that's how it starts.
Yeah. Talked to him about all them. We won the first round, didn't make it past, but we were out there for like 2 weeks. Came back, just made a lot of connections like with Lizzie Hale and all of them. It was really cool. It just really showed like it was a really good experience. And it sucks that it failed, but I'm still happy that it happened. That we got to go out there, meet all these connections. I still talk to Kellen. So it's just cool to have all these people that I can like talk to with that.
Well, and so, it's continuing to build your experience.
Oh yeah, it really is. I saw it move. Did I mess it up again?
No, I think we're clear.
Okay. I was like, oh no. So yeah, after speaking, so that we did that in high school, but then it came out like a little bit after high school. So we were like, oh yeah, cool.
And did you have it so the whole time you couldn't say anything?
Yeah, this was an NDA. Okay,
so like, you couldn't use it for promotion or anything.
Mm-mm, until it came out, and then we went right. Boom, 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 we posted about it everywhere. It's cool as shit, man. I remember the next show we played after it was with his old band at this old venue that's just gone now. Was it Slam House?
Was it?
I think you were there.
Was it Slam House?
Yeah, that one venue, I think it's gone
What year
now.
Was that?
I don't know at this point. 2021.
It was a venue that was there.
It
at
was
some point
a venue,
in time.
And yeah, at some point in time we were there, and I remember, yeah, that's when we were playing with you. Me and him have been like, I know it seems like he's just been over here, but funny thing is, me and him have been friends since like right around like that high school time, like right after I got out of high school. No, during high school, just right during high school, right during COVID. I remember we played this show at the Orpheum, and we came out and. Gowns and like masks, and we didn't know COVID was about to happen. This was the wildest thing ever. So it was like we came out and we were playing the 28 days later theme, 28 weeks later theme in the house in a heartbeat. And we came out right before we played our song Brains, and we were like on these gowns, these masks, and everything. And then like a few weeks later, COVID happened and everything went crazy. And I was like, oh shit. And that was the last show we played until after COVID.
Damn.
Like, and that's just
insane.
Right? Isn't that just that crazy? Is really like, crazy. I still think back to that. There's probably some pictures out there of that. I gotta find them, but it's like, that's weird. That's really weird. I mean, I also have an obsession with zombies, so maybe.
So how far was that last show before COVID from coming back from LA, or I should say rather No Cover coming out, where you got some momentum going and you have all these
like filming No Cover, here's high school, doing that show, No Cover coming out. So that show was like right here. So like No Cover came out, I don't think it was during COVID, but it might have been.
Yeah, I was going to say it might have been.
I can't remember. It might have been during lockdown and all of that. Man, I really blocked that time out. It's crazy. Like, I really try and think
time.
Back to it.
It
and it's
time.
Just like,
yeah.
I'm not going to sit here and be like, I'm so sad because of it. But like,
no, yeah.
I'm like, I really just don't remember it because it was just so like, first it was cool playing a lot of video games. It was pretty cool just chilling at home. Like, I ain't going to lie.
Two weeks off from school. Two weeks off from school.
Yeah.
How long did it turn out to be?
I don't know, because I switched
was
to...
Was it the rest of the year?
Yeah, it definitely was, because I switched to online school before the lockdown happened. So I jumped ahead, so I didn't have to worry about all of that.
Oh, lucky. But
I did graduate 2020, the year COVID happened, so I got, like, my high school diploma, like, an Office Max leave, and they basically handed me that shit in, like, a hazmat suit.
You see, so they say, see, me and him have a debate. They say that one's worse, like, graduating during COVID, but I had to do the year after. With COVID, like
with all the adjustments,
with all of the adjustments for a whole year, so I don't know. I feel like that one was a little bit worse because you were out. That sucked graduating like that, but doing a whole year and still graduating 6 feet apart in the middle of like Florida heat or watching
man.
Kids. Dude,
yeah,
there were actually kids passing out. I don't know if I should say that. They'll probably get mad at me. But like, I was watching them, and I looked over, and I see my dude, and he's just like, doomf, down.
Yeah.
And then the other one down. And I'm like, oh, God, we got it. We can make it. It was like 2 hours long of graduation.
Yeah, the heat is real.
Yeah.
So you get to that point then, and you're getting out of high school, and you're thinking, you're at this point, you're already all in the band for obvious reasons, yeah?
Which part?
You're already all in for the band for obvious reasons. You're not thinking, I'm going to go to college and be an architect.
Thing is, I had like, yeah, I don't know, I think about this sometimes, but like, I had like a ride to college. I had a pretty cool scholarship, and I was like, no, the band. So I want y'all to know, if you ever doubt that I'm dedicated, I did really good in school. I just didn't like it. I really, like, it may sound dumb, stay in school. I fucking hated it. Like, I really, really just didn't like it. It wasn't my thing. I wanted to make art and do this. Like, I don't know. I'm not stupid. Probably a lot of people think I am. But, like, I got all my work done. I did really well. I just didn't want to do any more of it. I wanted to do this. Like, this is really what I wanted to do.
So when you're first setting out on your own then, what's the state of the band like at that point? You graduate high school. What's the state of the band? You're in COVID at that point?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what? The best you can do is write?
Yeah, just write and play shows.
As time went on, as lockdowns started getting lifted and people started being like, okay, I'm sick of staying inside with a mask, like more places would open up. But there was a good period of time where like the music scene was completely like killed because of COVID.
So weird. I look
it
back,
it was insane. Because
it's crazy. I was looking at the Instagram archive and like stories, and I just see like this gap in like that year, and I'm like, how was I even doing? Like, it just kind of like, I think everybody just got sad, fell off. I fell back. Played a lot of video games, man. Played
right.
A lot.
Yeah.
Beat a lot. Wasn't that during COVID? What did you play? Was that when you played Neon White?
No, I think Neon White came after COVID. During COVID, I was definitely playing Overwatch. I played Overwatch for like, since like a couple of years ago.
The hours were stacking.
Yeah.
This guy playing Overwatch.
Yeah, well.
Be a real man and play Fortnite.
All right.
So then you're coming out of COVID, and then what was the impetus? It was like, okay, we can start playing shows again?
Yeah, it was kind of like that. I realized this was just a long journey of realizing like, okay, play show. Maybe we shouldn't focus so much on shows. Oh, wait, okay.
Just because you were forced not to?
I think it was just because, like, we didn't have shows for so long. We were so ready to just go back out and start playing shows again. I mean, I still feel like we're still slightly recovering from it with people going out. Like, we're getting there. People are starting to really come out to shows. But there was a time where I kind of lost motivation, too, because, I mean, people just didn't go to shows as much. Like, you would see, like, I mean, I was talking to some photographers, and they were, like, talking about, like, I remember this very specific conversation that made me like, whoa, really? It's not just like us. We don't just suck. I was like, he was like, yeah, I was taking photos for like Drowning Pool. And there was about like the same amount of people in there. And I was like, oh, what the hell's going on? It just felt like everything was just dying. But now it's like people are coming back out. People are hungry for it. It's nice. It's nice to be gone from that.
Yeah, we're starting to shake out a little bit.
Crazy. Now, like, the biggest thing is now we can't go to Walmart in the middle of the night. Like,
no 3 a.m. Walmart trip.
3 a.m. Walmart trips, like, defined my high school experience.
Yeah.
Doing illicit substances with my friends and going to Walmart in the middle of the
night.
And
it's the brightest place on planet Earth.
It really is. It's the most beautiful place. You're there, and it was Godspeed.
For some reason,
and
it's bright as the sun.
They are never
going to
open it up again because they make the exact same amount of money with half of the hours. So, like, why would they?
Over with.
Like, why would they?
Yeah.
Just be good Samaritans, man.
Can't y'all just make me happy?
Maybe somebody, you got to get a franchise Walmart and be the only 24-hour one to be like that last Blockbuster.
I have a new business plan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, there you go. You get a franchise Walmart, you do it 24 hours a day, and you put a bar in it. Done.
I think we might be onto something here. That's
done. It's the last Blockbuster as an Airbnb, but just turned on its side a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay, so we were talking about your music.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So when do you put out, like, your first record that you feel is, like, serious record? You come out now, you're not kids in high school, you're now kid out of high school. What's the first part where you're starting to feel like, okay, this is what I'm doing?
I mean, I've always, to be honest, like, felt like this is what I'm going to do. But, like, when Attack of the Ducks finally came out, no, that's the album. So I'd say, like, when the first single from it, what was the first single? White Whale. When White Whale came out, I was like, ooh, this sounds really good, because I know how it used to sound, and then I was hearing how it sounded now, like with full production and everything, and I was okay. Like, oh yeah.
So
oh, yeah,
this was one of those tracks.
Good. Yeah, I was like, okay, this sounds really good. Everything off of Attack of the Ducks besides Guts is an old track, actually. It's just, I just really like those songs, and I wanted to get them out. There are, like, what's funny is, like, there's lost tracks out there from Penny Fountain. There's probably, like, so, like, on Parade of Ducks, which is, see, Attack of the Ducks is just a reply to what the original album was called, which was Parade of Ducks. And then, so, like, just me sitting here, like, oh, I think this would be really funny. Man, I wanted to make a poster where it was, like, you know, Attack of the Clones, like the poster for that.
Yeah, yeah.
But just have it with like ducks and like our faces and everything. Never came around, but I still think that'd be really funny to do.
There's time.
Yeah, there's time. But so yeah, whenever White Whale came out, I was like, oh yeah. Well, you were at the party, right?
I was. I was at the White Whale release party, and it rained, and you guys couldn't even perform the song, so we all just got really like fucked up instead, and just stood around in the rain for like 4 hours.
we had
makes a story though.
It was a good story up, though. So
we had. Did we sell? I don't think we sold any merch.
Well, there was a couple of bands that were there that
we had like a bar. We had merch.
The bar was awesome.
We made our own little festival at a house.
Nice.
It was, you know, we're just doing shit. But yeah, I mean, we had a great turnout. But
and that was like the first like produced thing you did, like you said, that it was starting to sound like it was in your head now coming back to you.
Yeah, 100%. Technically, Damn It does, but that's a cover, so I won't. That can stay over here. So like, I'll just leave that. But then, so yeah, it was White Whale, and then Poncho. Poncho was really cool because it had an actual music video with it, and that's when I was like, ooh, music video. And we went to go film out in West Palm Beach. He's getting close. You're coming. You're getting close in the story. What's funny about him is he's been here the whole time, by the way. Like, through all most of this, he's just there.
Just wasn't in the band yet.
Yeah, just wasn't in the band yet. Yeah. He's just been, like, the homie that, like, I see it all the time at the shows or I text, you know.
Playing in other bands.
Yeah.
Yeah. This came from, was that a ghost? What was that?
Yeah.
But so then yeah, Poncho had the music video. We went to go film out in it's West Palm. Yeah. Out in West Palm
Beach.
We
just keep saying Miami.
Yeah, I'm trying not to. at Aflux Studios. And that's like a real like I don't know, like really big studio where like Korn and them will come to like a lot of different big bands. I don't want to say Korn, but I just saw that on like their like little thing, and I thought it was cool.
Yeah.
But it's where they come and set up like live shows, and they test it all in this really big room.
Cool.
They set up all
Yeah.
And it's a great place to film videos. And so yeah, we got that video shot there, and then I was like, oh my god, this is where we're gonna go to shoot our videos for like the rest of it. And so yeah, Poncho came out, did really well. People really liked it.
And did you have a whole record's worth of material at that point, or were you doing the singles game?
Like. What do you mean?
Were you recording each song individually and putting it out, or did you have them all recorded and you were just piecemeal releasing them?
Kind of both. Towards the end, it became we had them all, but then like, but during White Whale and Poncho, we did not, because like, yeah, White Whale came out in April, and then the technically EP, but album? No, it's an EP because it's six songs. It's one song less than an album. Yeah, White Whale came out in April, and then the EP came out in January. So there was a lot of time between that.
Okay.
But yeah, towards the end is when we, like, once we released Brains, we had the rest recorded by that point. Brains came out on Friday the 13th. I just thought it was a really cool day to release it.
Nice.
It's about zombies and everything.
Nice.
But yeah, we had videos for Goth Girl and Brains. We should have released, okay, looking back, Goth Girl should have been released as a single because it's weird whenever you're listening to it on, like, Spotify or something, and it's just, like, the Attack of the Ducks cover because I feel like it would just be better with, like, a Goth Girl or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. But it's fine. You live and you learn.
There's time. The next one is going to be the Star Wars theme with the Goth Girl.
Yes.
Somehow incorporated. She can be like Darth Maul or something. They all turn out to be, right? No, maybe not. So when you start putting these songs out, the reason why I ask that is because I'm always curious how bands feel about putting out singles versus putting out an album, whether or not it's an EP or a full-length album. Do you feel like you're to the point at any stage in when you're making your music where it's like, man, we just got to put out a couple singles till we can buy the time between April and January? Or do you really want to set out and make a record? Do you have a preference? Do you feel like there's any pressure to do one or the other?
So, like, I like the concept of records, but at the same time, I understand the fact that they're kind of, they're not dying, but they're getting shorter. is like people's attention spans, like, let's be real, they are getting shorter. It's not even just like a, are they? They really are.
Yeah.
So people like more short form content. So I used to really be like adamant on albums, which I still halfway am. So it's like, I don't spoil anything. I'll spoil. Well, with our next albums, I really want to have them. I want to be like an album, but like the low, like a 7-song album or 8. So it's a shorter album, but every song hits. And we release like 3 to 4 singles before the album comes out and then release it. So then you just get these extra songs on there. But like, I want every song to hit. But I still like the concept of telling a story with an album. Like,
right.
Hell, like one of my favorite albums is definitely like I said, American Idiot, which is a concept album. The whole album tells a story.
Right.
Which, so I'm kind of impartial. I understand the fact of like how people want things now. So you want to have singles. But I'm kind of in both. I kind of would want to do both. So like if we are recording an album, I would also just like to release some random singles that have absolutely nothing to do with any other projects. So just like, oh, this one's cool. Hey, let's make a pop song real quick. Is this your new sound? No, I'll do whatever I want. Like,
yeah,
I like that. I always want it to be like, we can experiment, we can have fun, but it always sounds like Penny Fountain.
What do you think? Well, then that begs the question, what makes it always sound like Penny Fountain?
I have no idea if I'm going to be right.
Yeah. Well, like, being that you've been witness and now accomplice,
yeah.
What would you say is some of the fundamental Penny Fountain DNA?
I don't know. It's kind of a loaded question because I've honestly, like, I was going through my Instagram the other day. I was looking at people that I've been following, like, for the longest. And, like, since, like, the start, I've legitimately been, like, a Penny Fountain fanboy. Not just because Xavier is my friend, but it's, like, I really did enjoy the music. Like, there was something about that, like, really stuck out to me compared to a lot of other local artists I'd seen, even seeing them perform live. Like, there's, like, an energy to it. And I really feel like a lot of the inspiration that comes from earlier pop punk to emo to even a little bit of, like, metal, like, it all kind of, like, culminates into, like, this sound that feels really unique to me. Where, like, nothing is, like, entirely original, but it's a combination of different things that, you know, you've been inspired by.
Are you just getting to the, like, that? That's such a wild way to say that. Nothing is original.
Well, I mean, you know what I mean. Everything's, it's derivative from somewhere.
Well, nothing is original.
Yeah, nothing is. Dude, yeah. I'll be sitting there and I'll see something online and I'll be like, I guess I've just never had an original moment.
It always comes from somewhere, but it's the way you take that inspiration and make it your own into something that really creates that sound that is yours.
It's this. Have you seen the South Park episode, The Simpsons Did It?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's that. I mean, everything is Simpsons Did It eventually.
100%. Yeah.
But well, that begs the question, when you were first starting to play or you're first getting moving, what are some of the things that you wanted to be, give your listeners, like he's saying, something that is familiar, but not the same, you know what I mean? You gotta be new, but you can't be so new we're avant-garde, you know what I mean? So what were some of the big elements that you wanted? Was you know, keep the punk thing, you wanted to keep the emo thing, you wanted to tell a story. What are some of the things that are important to you when you're writing your songs?
Well, at first, I started out like, I was talking a lot about Green Day, but if I'm going to be real, Smashing Pumpkins and Blink-182 are like my big ones. Like, Green Day kind of like, I kind of like, I don't know, I don't say grew out, but like, I think I just over-listened to him, to be honest. But I don't know, I listened to a lot of Blink, and then I really was obsessed with Blink for, still am. I know every song, if I'm going to be real. literally every song on my, like, songs, it's ridiculous. But, so, like, I watch documentaries and stuff, and what they would talk about is kind of, like, how I felt. They kind of inspired me. They would be, like, they just wanted to write about, they wanted to be themselves. Like, if we want, we can be a little funny. That's what I did in the first album. Like, when I say first album, I'm talking about the one that's, like, gone. I don't know if it's on anything. It might be on our SoundCloud. I don't remember if I, like, purged
it's
that
thing. It's somewhere
in
the digital dust.
A couple of songs are on it. But
yeah, I think I, like, purged it. Mainly because it's just, like, you can go find them. I'm just not happy with them.
Yeah, well.
But, you know. But I like the fact of just, like, being yourself with it. Like, they could be, like, let's say a really stupid song by Blink is, like, Family Reunion, where the whole thing is just them cursing. Or then you have songs like Adam's Song and Stay Together for the Kids,
right,
which are just absolutely brutal songs. So, I don't know, I like that diversity. So, that's what I kind of like. I took that concept into a lot of the stuff I do. Like, we have, like, Brains. Brains is literally just about, like, zombies. But what's funny about that song is it started as, like, a really personal song to me. every single lyric in it was different. Melody was the exact same. Everything about the song was the exact same, but it was not about zombies. It was about, like, my mental health and everything. And then, like, a guitarist at the time was like, that's too sad, change it. And then, like, out of spite, I was like, okay, it's about zombies now. And they changed the whole thing to be about zombies, which I love zombies, but I just think it's kind of funny that that is, like, how it came to be. So
the pendulum swing the total other way.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, like, through spite, you can do anything, y'all.
It is a dangerous motivator.
It really is. Like, my God. But then I feel like we have some pretty sad songs. No, we don't. Not right now.
But your thing...
They're coming out. We're getting
Euphoria is pretty sad. Like, okay, yeah, if we compare Brains to Euphoria, like, that's a pretty... It's a really good
example.
The
lyrics are much more complex in Euphoria, for sure.
Yeah, Brains is literally... Yeah, it's not complex at all.
No.
But Euphoria... I don't know. I just wanted to be. We grew up.
It's like, very heartstring pulley. Makes you feel.
Also, yeah, Brains was written in high school. A lot of the stuff I have to think about is like was written in high school. Like, I was just kind of messing around at first. I was just having fun, a really good time, and then went through a lot of shit. Went through a lot of personal. I get why people get sadder and write sad songs. They get there's a lot of shit that can happen.
Yeah, and like, it's a good place to let it go, of course.
Right? Yeah.
So at what point does your songwriting become more serious where it's, you mean, I guess when you, it sounds to me like the answer to my last question was the big thing for you is to make sure that no matter what you're doing, you're leaving space for you to be yourself, mm-hmm. the band to be itself and let it do its thing. Though you had the spot where it was like you were trying to do that, but you got reeled back and had to write a Brain song out of spite and move along.
Yeah.
at what point do you start to now give yourself the freedom to let what figuratively or literally started out as Brains be something you're doing now that gets seen all the way to the end without turning into Brains?
With
and is Euphoria is that is starting to be that
is,
yeah
it really is like the true like I mean on Attack of the Ducks there is a song called Guts which it was during Halloween like that song is not old it's I wrote it 2 Halloweens ago and it was like on like Halloween I remember like around like in October I was just like, I want to write, like, and I had just saw Deftones, and they had a song called, like, Digital Bath. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I just want to write, like, a really creepy, like, weird song about, like, some dude, like, killing a girl or something. Like, just something weird. Like, just because I just wanted to.
Yeah.
Like, some people would be like, people would probably be like, is this how you feel? I'm like, no. I just like Halloween, like, scary movies and thought this would be, like, a weird song to write.
An exercise and in writing, yeah.
Yeah, that's really just what it was. And I thought it sounded cool. And I thought it, I don't know. I just thought it was cool. So I guess maybe that one... Yeah, right. I guess that one maybe is kind of like a step in the way. But some of these songs from that we're gonna be releasing coming up are kind of old. Not really. I mean, we changed them a bit, but like, man, we've written so many songs and we just haven't released them. Like, Euphoria started a long time ago, but it was just like the riff and the chorus. But then these new lyrics and everything, because there wasn't ever any lyrics for the song besides like the chorus and that. And then I was like. Pretty few months ago, I just started writing. I had felt like, so I guess maybe it did start recently when I really started getting these lyrics. But then we also have a song called Gas Station Aliens. That's not a spoiler because that's already been released. But then I took it down because I didn't like the way it sounded. But we're going to release it again. It's coming again.
This is the theme.
Yeah, right. Basically, it's just really getting out what we want. So some of these songs are old, some of these songs are new, but they're not really old. It's like they're old, but they're not.
But yeah, but it's still like the becoming now the more literal manifestation of what the things you took inspiration from to be yourself and do your thing, whether or not you're going to write the song that's straight cursing or Adam's song was mega heavy topic.
Exactly. Like we started out pretty pop punk. Like we had Attack of the Duck sounds pretty pop punk, but now I feel like we're really stepping into our own direction. Like Euphoria, I feel like sounds really different than other stuff. But it still kind of sounds like us. I don't know. That's the thing. I don't know what it is, but it's like.
So take me to the point where Nick comes into the band and now you're playing as a three-piece and you're starting to have this space where this stuff is growing from.
So like, so we were actually a three-piece and then we became a four-piece with him, right?
Ah.
Actually, I've talked so much. You talk about your introduction.
All right. So like I said, starting from the beginning, I moved here to Florida from Colorado when I was like 15.
Man, you went so far back.
Well, we're gonna do a quick little. We're gonna do the flyover. We're not going like my whole life story.
We're going the flyover. And what size shoe?
But you know, moved to Florida. Sophomore year of high school is where I met some of my old band members, and then, you know, we were small little garage band, you know, get together, and we did some actual live shows, which I never thought we'd go that far. That was super fun. Through that, like we mentioned before, the time at Xavier, and since then I'd always been, you know, not like super close to Xavier, but like as far as the music scene goes, we were pretty tight. Like we'd be doing shows with each other. We wouldn't like talk all the time.
Yeah, be in the same orbit.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm, yeah. You know, we'd hit each other, play video games up every now and again, but it got to a point where like I started gravitating more towards Xavier, and we'd play video games together. And at one point in time, he was like, hey, we want to do something big. We want to do a tour. Can you be the guitarist? And I'm like, oh my God, that sounds really stressful. But like, yeah, dude, I'll do it. I'm down. So I started going to practice with Penny Fountain at the studio and learning all the songs and practicing a bunch and being the backup guitarist for that tour. And that was like, I think that was a big eye opener for me doing that little week tour where it's like, I'm fully out of my comfort zone. I am like miles away from my house. Like I don't see my cat. I have my family. I haven't seen him. It's like, I loved it. Like it was stressful. There's a lot of stuff that happened, but it was super like, it made me realize this is what I want to do. And I knew the minute that Xavier asked me, hey, can you play guitar for the band? Like for the tour. I'm like, yeah, this is my way to like get into this band that I've wanted to be a part of for like ever. Cause I've always loved the music. It's a sound that I really, really enjoy.
Nice.
So yeah, since what was it, June of last year, right?
Wait, the tour was in July. But
July
like,
of
we
last
started
year.
Practicing a while, and I remember what's even funnier is I had been thinking about bringing you in for like actually quite a while because I had wanted to make Penny Fountain a four piece for a while because it sounds better just to have like an extra guitarist,
mm-hmm.
like because we didn't have backing tracks at the time. We're going to. They're gonna sound really good, but yeah, I've been thinking about it for a while because the first time. Like, we really started, like, becoming friends was we did this, like, photo shoot for a show that we had done together with our bands.
Yeah, yeah, dude.
And he saw my Resident Evil tattoo, and then boom, right there.
I was so nervous. I used to be so, like, socially awkward. Like, my ability to talk to people just did not exist. So after we did the one show that you mentioned before, what was this photo shoot during lockdown? Was that?
I don't remember.
Okay, at some point in the past couple of years, we did a photo shoot together, and I remember seeing Xavier, and I was a very much different person.
So was I. I had red hair.
Yeah.
I had red hair and was wearing a tank top. True. When's the last time you see me wear a tank top?
It's been a minute. But yeah, I saw his tattoo and I was like, hey, that's really cool. And then, you know. But
you still have, yeah, you need to get to where you're coming in.
So,
play the tour.
Yeah, play the tour. Started doing shows.
We lost some members at the end. Like, I'm gonna be real. This happened. We lost some members at the end of the tour.
Yeah.
Then it looked like, okay, I had to really this is where the pushing through thing
I was gonna say, this sounds like a pushing.
Yeah.
This is very much a pushing, if I'm gonna be real. But yeah, I had to get through it. Like, if I'm gonna be real, I'm gonna talk about it. I knew these guys for a very long time. So yeah, it's like a breakup. Had to push through and be
that's
like,
a good
do
way
I
to put it.
Yeah, it's just
it is.
That's, like a, that's actually honestly exactly what it feels like. Yeah, it's sometimes like a, even worse, man, because these are brothers, you know?
Yeah. But you know, you gotta be like, okay, what do I wanna do? Do I want it like it was a thing of like, do we restart, change the name of the band, do something? And I'm like, no, we've made so many connections. I'm not going to throw all this away. This band means a lot to me, and I want to keep going. And if Nick was there, and Nick was like, I would like to keep going with you. And I was like, you know what? We're going to do it. We're just going to do it. I'm going to keep going. I'm going to push through because I'm still here. And I remember that was probably one of like the tough, a lot of other personal things were happening in my life at that time. So it was just like one thing after the next, after the next, after the next. Like this really affected me. Yeah.
Did you have a temptation to just throw the baby out with the bathwater and just be like, fuck it, don't want to do this?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like I can't even lie. I was like, you know, I don't even know what I'm going to do. Like there was like time.
Last day of the tour.
Yeah. What do you mean?
Like the Oscuro show. We were already like pretty upset that day. It had been a full week of us being around each other. Like everybody was really vulnerable. So it was already a point of Xavier.
I don't mean to laugh. That's just my PTSD
coming out. Xavier
was
very much in like a fuck it kind of sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. But
it's hard
rebuilding. Through.
Yeah, I was going to say, but that's the moment. It's what you can do when you can gather your shit and say to yourself,
yeah, absolutely.
What am I going to do?
That's all being pissed at each other and still playing the show.
So when this, that's mandatory. Right. That's mandatory.
I was like, absolutely not. We have to. These people paid for it. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. 100%. So then do you start what is now this next leg of Penny Fountain was just the two of you? And then you add
The man, he's a ghost in the walls right now. But yeah, started out with just the two of us. And then we had Justin and a friend come along to fill in. And then
and since noticed, you had all the songs written, it was easy enough to just find people to play it in the beginning?
Yeah, just teach. And then it took a bit because I'm going to be real. This is my baby. This is my absolute baby. I know this has become your baby too, but this is my absolute... This has been a big part of my life.
He gets the most custody over it. I only get the band on the weekends. So.
Yeah. It's important. All haircuts he signs off on.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm 22 and I've been doing this since I was 15. This is like a child to me.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm very protective over it. So
when you start picking up the pieces again, what are you thinking? We're just going to get some people to play the songs, we'll play shows.
It's kind of like, I was kind of just coping at the same time too, because like this has been my life for so long, this is what I want to do. First, I was just like, we just got to play these shows. And then it started to click to me, I'm having a really good time. Like these people are actually working really well with me. Like we're getting stuff done. Was that scary?
No, we're good.
We're getting stuff done. It's actually going good. The first show we did together was the Halloween show, and that show was absolutely wild at Oscura. Oh my God, I was dressed as Leon Kennedy. I love that. Oh my God, it was such a good outfit.
So it was good that you could have your attitude towards it turned around.
Mm-hmm. It was hard. Like it was really, really, really hard at first. But
it's like a good bit of rebuilding.
I still think about it. I still be like, man. But you just gotta keep on keeping on because this is what I want to do, and. Like I said, I'm not going to let anybody stop me.
No. Why?
Because I...
What, I don't know, why, anyway, what else are we going to do, man?
I thought that was a hard quote. I looked at the camera for that.
No, but I'm saying, why would you let anybody stop you? You know what I mean?
Oh, why would you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, and see, that's the thing. And that's part of the kind of the ethos of the show is giving people permission that they don't give themselves to do their thing. And as we can share stories like this, it's that kind of powerful statement when you can look in the camera and say, you're not going to stop me. That helps somebody else not be stopped.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, you know, it sounds like you've learned the reality in more ways than one that part of the road to success, or one of the biggest part of road to success, is just hanging the fuck in there.
Yeah.
It's really hard. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it, but that's what...
Dude, every day.
Sounds
every
awful, day. Like... But that's what weeds the people out who deserve it and the people who don't.
Yeah. Like, well, if nobody thinks you're nuts, then you're not trying hard enough, or maybe some is the quote like that, or you're not obsessed. If they don't think you're obsessed, then you're not trying hard enough.
You gotta be a little bit delusional about it.
You gotta be a little delulu.
Yeah. Okay, so then let's skip a little bit forward to writing and recording Euphoria.
Mm-hmm.
Was this a standalone? You just set to do this one out as a single?
Maybe.
Well, I mean, did you record it by itself?
Oh well, yeah, we recorded it by itself, but it's there's just some more things coming.
Yeah,
it's a package.
So was the intention behind it? I guess what I'm driving at was the intention behind it to be like, here's a little bit of a gear shift. This has the Penny Fountain DNA you're used to, but here's where I'm going.
Oh, it's meant to be a shift.
This is a big
comeback. It is a big comeback, a big shift. I want people to be like, okay, this is a new direction. The other stuff is like, okay, it's like Penny Fountain, but I want you to hear Euphoria and be like, okay. This is what I think of when I think of Penny Fountain. This is the direction they're heading now. Like,
gotcha.
And like, yeah, that's what I want it to be. Thing is I don't want you to think that's all that we will ever be, because we will do whatever we want.
Well, right? I mean, I guess it helps make the statement that you can change gears.
Yeah, like we definitely can. Like I always say, if I want to make a pop song, I will make a pop song. Like I like a lot of different kinds of music, and I know he does too. We listen to a lot of music, which I like to incorporate with their music. Like right now, I really like a lot of different like. Synthwave and electronic shit to mix in there because it's just cool. I like it.
Yeah.
And then if I wanted to put a banjo in there, I'd put a banjo on there. I can't see where it would work right now, but maybe
we'll
someday
figure it out.
In the future, yeah.
It's a wide pantheon.
Mandolin, like some Silent Hill shit. Ooh. I have a mandolin.
Well, I was going to say, you got the West Virginia bluegrass roots.
Yeah, I have
a... It's already the same tempo.
Mm-hmm. I have my great... My great-grandpa's mandolin. It's a Gibson, like, mandolin from like, the 70s. It's
That's
wild.
Awesome.
Yeah, no, I look at this thing, I'm like... It's crazy. The only thing I know how to play on it is the Silent Hill theme, too.
Oh, it's a start.
Yeah, right?
You got to learn Enter Sandman, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Step two.
That was one of the first I learned on the guitar.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So you just apply it to mandolin and you're good.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you handle the writing now? Is it more of a collaborative thing you're doing in real time, or are you still putting together like the guts of it and ideas and fleshing it out with everybody?
So the thing is no hate, no diss, but I've done a lot of like, not on you.
No. But I'm agreeing with you with what you're about to say, because I know what you're about
to say.
I've
done a lot of the writing since the beginning. So like, I kind of have trouble. Like, I will get so involved in something and then I'm like, wait, okay, this guy can actually like help me with it.
Yeah.
I'm gonna be real.
Well, that's something we talk about a lot on the show with artists, getting precious with parts. Mm-hmm. How you can navigate between getting precious and allowing people to help you enhance it.
Yeah, it's like I kind of forget that I can have someone help me. It's not like a don't enhance it. It's a, oh my God, wait, yes.
Yeah, I very much have to remind you a bunch of like, yeah, this is not a you thing. You know, it's a very collaborative and I'm willing to help out in any way possible.
It's not like I'm like against that. I'm always like, oh, bet. It's just like it. So like I'll get sucked in and I think about it because that's, which sucks to say, but that's what I'm used to. And
I never
wanted it to be like that, but that's what I'm used to.
Yeah.
It's like part of the DNA of starting a bedroom kid. Mm-hmm. And
I was the one with all the responsibilities. Like, I'm not even sitting here talking shit. I am just saying happened. I had to do everything.
No, but it is
like,
crazy.
Booking, like, people forget, like, when you're in a band, you have to, like, book everything. You have to set up some, like, okay, we had to set up a business, an LLC, right? Now we got to change that business. What is an article of amendment? I don't know, because I'm not a businessman, but now I basically am, because I know all these business terms and all this random shit that I never wanted to have to learn how to do, because I just wanted to make music. But then I also have to set up the website. I have to set up e-commerce or getting like taxes, because if I don't do taxes, the IRS can get mad at me.
Welcome to 2025.
Like, and this is how it always was, and I would want help. I would need help. I'd be like, okay, I'm tired of like booking things or like setting up shows or like reaching out to people. Can people help me? And I just didn't get a lot of help. So nowadays, I still kind of like do that. I'll get like so sucked into it. And then Nick will be like, wait, I can help too. And I'm like, oh, yeah, wait, thank you. Because I'm just used to that.
And I'll get in a phone call with you, but like, I did this, I did this, did this, did this. I'm like, whoa, dude, slow the phone down. Like, where can I be helping out with this?
Yeah.
Love that. Yeah, but that's a common thing, you know, when you get used to being self-sufficient or being relied on, you forget that other people are willing to help and you mm-hmm. can rely on them, yep. You know? That's a powerful thing to have. I'm sure that helps in the comeback, as it were, to have more of that kind of vibe amongst you guys.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely.
So I'm not going to, I got to get you out of here on something fun. Unless you want to pull Justin in and Justin can say some peace.
Yeah,
I can go out and Justin. Goodbye.
I think he was trying to do that earlier, but you were like,
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, you see, I yap.
That's all right.
I can tell.
Grade A yapping is, you know,
it,
mandatory.
It's part of it. Yeah.
It's mandatory.
As a front man, you have to just be able to just keep going and going and going and going and going.
Yeah.
And going and going and going and going.
All right. Xavier. Well, Justin, welcome.
Hey, what's going on?
Hi, Justin.
Hey, Nick.
Hey, you know him?
I think I do. Cool. No, honestly, yeah. What they were saying is, it's funny. I'm a little bit older than the guys, but, you know, we all grew up playing in different bands. And that first show at the Orpheum where Xavier shows up playing those gowns, I saw that and I was like, all right, these guys mean business. They are setting the tone. And, you know, just being around that, playing at different shows. We played at the Brandon Mall one time.
That was the show that my band did before COVID happened. That was the last thing that we did before that lockdown happened. Yep.
And it's just funny seeing how the people who stick with it. And
right.
That's the people you want to gravitate towards. So, yeah, we've been in the scene, like, just around bumping shoulders, playing shows, and having the opportunity to come on board and, you know, be a part of this is a big plus, so I'm excited.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've known you the longest out of, you know, most everybody in the scene, I want to say.
Yeah, I think we've probably played more shows together, but then, like, most recently, the Prime and Penny Found have been playing a lot of shows together.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Then I've been recently regional coordinator of a music school, so I teach private lessons and I contract.
Oh, nice.
And teach. Yeah, so.
Love that.
So doing that, but this is probably the main, outside of that, the main thing I'm doing is playing shows. I've been in cover bands, I've played for rappers, I played for hardcore bands, so I've been dabbling a little bit.
Playing for rappers as a drummer, though?
It's fun. It's fun, yeah. You get a whole different scope of the scene, and it's interesting.
So what do you think, and that then this will be a little bit of an aside here, what do you think about the way the scene is now with getting people out to shows and supporting original art, being that there's 160,000 new songs a day?
I think I have a really biased perspective. As like a scene musician, I feel like there's been a lot of times I'll be at work and my coworker's like, oh, I just paid like this much money to go see this person. It's like, dude, you're going to a fucking stadium to see them the size of an ant and then see them on a big screen when you could pay like 15, 20 bucks, less than that most of the time, to go into a local show, and you'll be able to talk to the people after. You could learn about music. You can ask them all these questions and you're going to get a much more like big sense of community with it.
True.
But it is really hard to convince people because I feel like the numbers, the status, all of that is what really drives people to go see these big artists. They're big. You want to go see this artist live, but you wouldn't want to go see this band that has 200 followers, even though some people would argue that they're more talented or they have more of a thing or like theme going that's more objectively interesting to see, you know?
Well, you said it. There's so many new artists coming out with everything. Anything could be pushed on any platform and be called music.
Yeah.
So it comes down to entertainment. You know, I think musicians are entertainer first and musicians second, because once you get to a certain level, it's how can I captivate my audience? How can I keep them in their seats? How can I sell those tickets? How can I push this me on this platform? And you're kind of like what Xavier said, you're doing more just being a musician. You're being a media creator. You're being a business person in a sense.
Yeah.
So you're having to think outside the box. Like, all right, I'm not just playing a show with music. I'm creating an experience. I'm creating a vibe. And that vibe is what people want to continue to see. You know, you go see these big productions, whether it's metal shows with the giant flames or, you know, rap shows with all the different lights and productions. It's that vibe you get. People are bouncing around. They know the songs. So when you're doing your job right, you're doing, you know, selling the tickets. But it is hard to break away from that cookie cutter. You're a punk band. This is what you sound like. I go to a ton of local shows. I know exactly how all the bands sound. You sound just like them.
You're right.
How do you break through from that? So
yeah, exactly. Well, that's the operative question, because, you know, it got to be to this point, and of course the pandemic kind of supercharged it, where everybody started to stay home more. Mm-hmm. You know, and going out to shows now, especially when you do it a lot, even when you want to be supportive, it does become way obvious that it is predictable to some degree, and either you're going to love it for that or it's going to make you stay home. Mm-hmm. But the real operative part when you're one of the performers is just what you said. How do you break out of that? So as you take things to the stage, what do you think are some of the things you try to do to make sure you're connecting in the audience with a way that makes them actually happy they came there, other than just playing your ass off?
No, well, and that's honestly, that's a big part of it. A lot of times, you know, I have people come up to me. I get this imposter syndrome sometimes, you know, being, you know, still on that local circuit. But every time you have someone come up and say, hey, that was a fantastic show, that was awesome. You know, one of the things I do is just play crazy, be crazy. You know, you got to be animated on stage. If you're sitting there, you know, focusing on your notes, or you're sitting there, am I playing this part right? You know, you're going to mess up. Play through it. Own it. Act it. You know, fake it till you make it. Do whatever. But the musicianship, part of that is the showmanship. You love your songs. People want to see you enjoying your songs. If you're just up there trying to make sure you're hitting it right, or you're playing every part right, cool, they hear that. But what they see you is you just doing this. But if you're up there flailing your arms, you know, knocking down your stuff, sweating, you know, people are engaged. They're in it. They're enthralled.
That visual stimulation. Yeah. They definitely need that.
Creating the vibe. So being on stage, and when you're at the local circuit, you don't have all these big productions to do. You know, we had at the last show at the skate park of Tampa, Wild came out, did a great job with the lights. Really, you know, lights are a big part of it. Venue, you know, setup is part of it. But when you have a crew come together, when you have a crowd come together who creates a good energy, it makes the show, it feeds you. So it is a team effort. But when you're on stage, you gotta sell it. You gotta be in there 110%.
Do you think that the audience attendance or participation, for want of a better way of putting it, is on an uptick now?
It's getting there.
Yeah.
It is a combination of, obviously, we have to promote our stuff. We have to do our jobs on getting people out there. And you can't be promoting to your friends all the time. You can't be like, hey, you know, you just came to the last show, come to this show. But when you're out there and you're you know, using your social media, you're using your networking, you know, I've had students come out to some of my shows. That's awesome. So,
yeah.
But, you know.
Hell yeah. That's got to be awesome for them.
It is. Like, okay, so my teacher does know what he's doing. Okay. So, but playing that circuit, getting out there and doing your due diligence, you don't want to oversaturate yourself playing the same venue, same bands. You got to stretch out your comfort zone. But building that fan base to where they want you to come, and they're waiting for you to come back. It's part of it. So putting in that legwork, putting in that marketing, putting in the, you know, boosting social media, promoting Euphoria, doing silly memes. That's all. I mean, you know, those get better posts than live videos. Just a drum cam, and, you know, think, oh, this is sick, I nailed that part. But we post Silent Hill meme that takes off.
Pops off.
So it's just about reaching your audience, know how to captivate their interest and
how to. I've recently found that to be the case as well. me posting Seth and I's head on a conjoined twin chef. Okay.
The brain rot's real.
Yeah.
This is not my music, so I don't have to feel any type of way about it. But does that ever cause any cognitive dissonance where it's like, man, I want to be a band, but I know I have to sprinkle a cat meme in there to do it now?
It shows that you're down to earth and not disconnected from your audience, I guess.
Suppose that's a very good way of looking at it.
I think we have it a little bit easier. I feel like we have a little bit of leeway to joke around and like mess around and post some stupid stuff as opposed to some other bands that like they want to take themselves in a much more serious direction. Like Xavier was saying earlier, we want to be joke and then be serious, but have like that balance to where like you feel, you know, we come across as being human, not just like we're here.
Well, one recent example I'm sure is getting plenty of coverage is when Courtney from Spirit Box was addressed as Poppy.
Yeah.
And they are monetizing on that now. And it's great. It's fantastic. It's a meme and all that.
Yeah.
But just taking those little moments where people connect with.
Right.
And just carrying that. Oh my goodness. I'm so sorry.
It's booby trap.
Yeah. Bam. Carrying that vibe, carrying that feeling, it's part of it. So there's a whole bunch of different ways, and that's the beauty of the modern day of today of entertainment is there's so many different ways to be entertained, whether it's visually, audibly, smells. I go into Yankee Candle and smell a nice candle, and I'm like, ooh, this is great. That entertained me. But it's all about what carries, and you just build on that momentum.
That's what I was going to say. Do you think that all of that stuff now is just a matter of how you can choose to package authenticity, because it seems like that's the strange product?
It is, because nothing is new under the sun. I think y'all touched on that a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
And it's how can we make, because almost everything scripted. Take us back to the early 2000s, reality TV show, scripted. Nothing is necessarily, but putting ourselves out there, putting our interests out there, being as candid as possible in the creating process and presenting ourselves on stage, that's how I think you really get a good core audience of, I know what these people are. I know what they stand for. I like the things they're doing. I want to see where they go. So
right.
It is a little bit of being personable with it, putting yourself out there, but also understanding the patterns or the what's in right now.
Yeah, you have to study the social media algorithm, because a lot of the times and it's such a pain in the ass, because like you'll spend so much effort making like a really nice looking post and it gets nowhere. And then like I said, video of a cat. Yeah. Boom, everybody loves the cat video.
Yeah. My big question, and it's sort of a question I ask myself, but I like to ask any creative person that comes in here, does that sort of thing, like I said, give you cognitive dissonance when you're making the art? It's like, man, at some point, this is going to have to be commoditized, for want of a better way of putting it. No matter how passionate I am about this, or how sincere I am about this, or how seriously I want to take myself, even if I'm in Tool, I got to commoditize my shit at some point here.
Yeah.
There is this idea of like selling out. And obviously in like the punk scene, you don't want to sell out. But when you
It's so different now.
Yeah. But when you have like, you know, I'm trying to think of all the silly different commercials that all these celebrities are in. Or like Shaq has his own candy.
Well, Shaq's on every side quest.
Yeah.
Like, he's literally doing every side quest.
He's going for the 100%. Yeah, sure. Like, yeah.
But either he's creative or he's just a smart businessman, but he's putting himself out there and grabbing on what he can. And that's part of it. I mean, you know, do I think there ever be a penny fountain candy? I don't know.
Maybe. That would be, well.
Kiss monetized on anything they could. It's like, what can I, you almost have to take yourself out of it and be like, what would be good for sustainment of what I want to do? If I want to keep
that's such a crazy thing.
What can I keep doing to keep making music? And not selling your soul, but giving a little bit of yourself away. I would never do a Kleenex commercial. Kleenex comes up to me with $10 billion. Okay, maybe I'll do a Kleenex commercial. You know, it's the self-sustaining. And, you know, props to people who stand on their hills and, you know, stick for what they believe. And that's a balance that I think the artists have to walk on now, is what can I be out there promoting that's good for the band, and what can I still hold myself true to and not give that self up?
Right. Because what made me curious about this was when you said, you know, you work really hard on a post and it goes nowhere. Are you ever, now that we live in this kind of landscape slash hellscape that you just described. When you're making your music, do you ever have that moment where you're thinking to yourself, man, I love this, but I might be making a post that is going to do fuck all?
Yeah. Oh, dude, absolutely. Yeah. If not, almost every post, just because of how the algorithm is. It's, at the end of the day, a lot of it
is literally and figuratively, your music and your...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course.
There's classes on it now. There's a science behind it with audio engineering, with social media marketing.
The psychology behind it is absolutely insane.
There's algorithms to it. So, and some people are a little bit more intuitive than that. I mean, I will give props to this younger generation. I think when they come up, like, look, well, you see it in marketing right now. Memes are really popular in marketing. Who is in charge of different marketing businesses right now? The next generation. So you have people, and I think that there is a more of connectivity or togetherness that comes to that, because now, you know, I'm a teacher and I teach kindergarten through fourth grade. And
that's so cool.
It's funny. And they'll say things and they're like, Mr. Justin, you know that? I'm like, yeah, I was there when they made that. But I think the part of the beauty of the modern world we live in is the connectedness is there, and what the younger generation, the older generation are into are a little bit more in between. So it's easier on that aspect to kind of cater to a wider audience. But then again, yeah. Sometimes I may say something that someone may not get, and it's like, okay, well, that post didn't do well. Let's try to really keep it as broad as we can then. Because you have your niche audiences where they have the very, like, inside joke type advertisement.
Right. But when it comes to your music, the flip side is you can't spend all your time writing bait tracks, even if you wanted to.
I mean, 154 or all those.
Easy, exactly.
You do have to push the envelope a little bit when it comes to what sounds good. I mean, Nick sent me a video earlier today where this guy was
micing up his drum set,
but he had different length tubes to where it created sort of like a reverb, like a high pitch.
It almost sounded like a drum kit, but also 808 at the same time.
Oh, yeah. It had a drop to it. And I was like, the ingenuity is there. So we're living in this age where you're really having to think outside the box, keep that core element that is the familiarity, but bring in different aspects where people are like, wow, this is new. I want to hear more of this. So,
right. Well, that's actually going to segue me perfect into what will be your fun question to get you out of here. Cool. And Xavier, you can yell in on this one from, from the depths of the nether. This is a question I like to ask bands, not necessarily to find out what your favorite band is, but to get more of an idea of where you see your music favorably sitting. So when this record you're going to eventually do comes out, what would be the dream lineup? You can each, usually it's only two bands, but since there's three of you, you can each pick a band. Who would you put on the bill with you to say, this is how I want to package Penny Fountain to the world in this grandiose, here we are.
I'll tell you right now, dude. Title Fight reunion tour with Penny Fountain. Title Fight, that's the band. 100% of the time, I'm going with Title Fight.
That's good.
That's my band, dude.
Xavier, you go.
Okay, well, obviously, I have my favorites. Yeah. But Penny Fountain, I'd definitely say Teenage Wrist.
Teenage Wrist.
That is a good one.
Xavier weighs in with Teenage Wrist.
I feel like I'm the one that's kind of like most out of loop with like the similar genre types, but I think...
Well,
like,
it could be Barry Manilow. It's your fantasy.
In there, man. Yeah.
I mean, honestly, Xavier's going to hate this, but Sleep Token. I love Sleep Token.
Why would I hate this?
Yeah, Sleep Token's great.
I know. I don't know. But like just they push the envelope so well, and that's the circuit I want to be in. I want to be in the envelope pusher.
What I'm driving at.
Their vocalist is phenomenal.
Yeah, exactly. Like, absolutely insane. The fact that they don't talk in between their set, but keeps the audience in captive the whole time is phenomenal.
It's more like a trance.
Why do I need
a
Sleep Token?
I don't know. You made a comment earlier, or maybe I just heard that from someone else.
You were hating on Sleep Token.
I almost wore a Sleep Token shirt, but I was like, nah, I won't do that. But yeah, it's,
I was going to wear a shirt that said, I know Xavier hates Sleep Token.
See? He knows the inside lore.
Yeah. So Xavier, come on out. I want to thank you guys all for coming.
Sit on.
Yeah, you can sit in our laps. Come
Well, on. this is the... I love you guys a long time. I appreciate you guys coming down so much. Honestly, you guys are K the family now. When you got a record, when you got something coming out, when you want to go tell it on the mountain, you've got a home here. I really appreciate you guys coming down and sharing your journey, and I look forward to rocking out with you in the future, man.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you so much.
Peace, Sheldon. I so bad. Yes.
Much love.
That
Thank you, gentlemen.
All right.